America's number one show on pop culture and politics. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. A great nation, a great day, a great new week coming up to our great Thanksgiving holiday. With all of that going on, we have two controversies that are great and ferocious and serious that both have a very complicated legal aspect to them. The controversies over vaccine mandates and over attempts to ban critical race theory from public schools. Even though some Democrats insist there is no critical race theory being taught in public schools, evidence, including statements by Randy Weingartner and the teachers, Randy Weingarten, and the teachers' unions across the country, would seem to indicate to the contrary. So who do you go to when you want to sort out some very complicated legal issues that are somewhat unpredictable? Nobody better than Professor Alan Dershowitz, for a half century, a distinguished constitutional law professor at Harvard Law School, a best-selling author, one of the people who was a member of President Trump's defense team during his impeachments. And Professor Dershowitz, always an honor to speak to you. Thank you for being on.
Always a pleasure to speak to you. One of these days, we'll have to speak during good times when good things are happening. You always call me when there are bad things happening. I guess I'm the guy to go to help analyze bad problems. But okay, I'm here.
Well, that's kind of what happens when you're a famous defense attorney, among mm-hmm. other things, too, right? People, clients call you when they're in trouble.
They do. Yep.
Okay. First of all, in trouble in terms of these mandates, your most recent book is called The Case for Vaccine Mandates. So I think we know where you stand. Will Biden's attempt to get federal mandates to work, will that hold up in court?
That's why you have to read my book, because even though the title says The Case for Vaccine Mandates, I don't think this particular vaccine mandate will necessarily stand up, because it was imposed unilaterally by the president without legislative authority. And most of the cases which have upheld any kind of mandate have done it with full legislative authority. For example, the famous Jacobson, Massachusetts case in 1905, both the state legislature and the city council authorized mandatory vaccinations for smallpox. I doubt that the courts would have upheld that if it had just been the governor. And I think during the COVID crisis, too many governors, too many mayors, too many police chiefs took too much power. The power, according to our constitutional system, to make laws is in the legislature, not in the executive. And so I think this court will have some problem with that. I do think that a properly passed a mandate, which is a last resort, after everything else has been tried, and which is based on the science, and which has appropriate exemptions for medical and perhaps religious objections, would be upheld by the court. But that's not what's going to be presented to this court.
Do you think this is going to be speeded to adjudication, or is it going to drag on, one hopes, till the pandemic ends first?
Well, I think generally crises tend to pass before cases get to the courts. That's been the history of prior crises. I actually wrote a long article about that back in 1970, before most of your listeners were born. But this one, the pandemic may not last, but COVID will last. And I think this case will get to the Supreme Court this term. I think we will have a decision by the end of June on whether or not essential mandates are constitutional, or this mandate is constitutional, and it'll be a close vote.
And what about the contradiction that seems to be going on now between governors like Governor Abbott of Texas, who is just trying to ban even private companies from doing vaccine mandates? Would that hold up an attempt by a governor to stop a private company from requiring its employees to be vaccinated?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. The governor would have no authority to do that. If he got a statute passed, that would be questionable. And that would be, you know, you wonder where liberals and conservatives would come out on that. Should the government be entitled to tell private companies that they can't condition employment on getting vaccinated? What's the conservative view on that? What's the liberal view on that? This pandemic has caused tremendous confusion among liberals and conservatives. I think the worst aspect of it, it's become so partisan. Fewer Republicans are vaccinated than Democrats. That shouldn't be the situation. This should be a medical decision that's made based on the science, not based on political ideology. But inevitably, everything in America today is based on politics. For example, the debate over statehood for the District of Columbia has nothing to do with voting rights for people in the District of Columbia. They can get that right by the District of Columbia ceding back to Maryland. It's all about whether the Democrats should get two more senators. And that's not the way political decisions should get made in this country.
Okay, bringing this to the idea of critical race theory, there are seven states so far that have passed and signed into law bans on the teaching of critical race theory. Mm-hmm. This, of course, will be challenged. And then, of course, raises the whole question about how do you define critical race theory. What do you think is the legal future of that dispute?
Well, first of all, let's never call it critical race theory. Let's call it what it is, uncritical race theory. You're not allowed to criticize the racial theory. It's real. It exists. I know. My friend and colleague at Harvard Law School invented it. And it's a real thing. And it sees the world only through race. And there's also gender race theory, gender theory. There's also gay theory. All these things are now being taught instead of, you know, any attempt to try to get at the truth. Everything is seen through identity politics. It's real. I think the courts will strike down legislative attempts to ban it, but they should also strike down legislative efforts to require it. It should not be either banned or required by the legislature. Once you ban it, you know, you're into the Skokes case. You're into banning evolution. You're banning other kinds of things. And I don't think that the state legislature should be banning approaches. They should be discouraging it, and no reasonable principal should allow the school to be taken over by this uncritical race theory, and nobody should ever compel it. And that's been the problem, too. In many school systems, it is now compelled. You have to pass litmus tests. You have to make a kind of...
Well, they're requiring in California, they passed, you have to take ethnic studies of various ethnic groups in order to graduate from high school. And that, some of the ethnic studies clearly skirts on the edge of critical race theory, no?
Oh, of course. And ethnic studies. Can you imagine if it was required in schools all over the country that you have to take Jewish studies or you have to take Catholic studies? Well, you have to take Irish studies. Nobody would accept that. And the idea that you have to see everything through the prism of identity politics, and that it's now a microaggression to say that the best person ought to get the job. The best person ought to get the job. Let me ask anybody, if you're flying in a storm, as I recently was with my family, a horrible storm, don't you want that pilot to be the best person who got that job? Do you really want that pilot to be somebody selected based on identity politics? How many people, when they go to have serious surgery, go and pick people based on identity politics? No, you want the best surgeon.
Absolutely. And we want the best legal commentator, and we got him with Alan Dershowitz. Read his new book. Can't believe how quickly he turns them out. The Case for Vaccine Mandates. More coming up on The MedVed Show.
Your daily dose of debate.
Give me more.
The Michael Medved Show.
A
on the Michael Medved show, with the vaccine mandate issue continuing to percolate, and it is unbelievable to me that Texas and other states are hoping to enforce legislation that would prevent private companies that actually not only want to comply with what the federal government is trying to do and may not be legal for the federal government to do it, but it's certainly legal in most states under a normal, sane situation. If you have a company and you have a couple of hundred employees, say, and you think you will be safer and your other employees will be safer and it will be a better workplace to make sure that everybody has a vaccination, why should the state government step in and try to prevent that? And again, that has not been the case with the NFL. There have been lots and lots of cases of NFL players who have come down with coronavirus, with COVID-19, but not many of players who have lied about actually getting the vaccine. And this, of course, goes to the great quarterback, and he is a great quarterback for the Green Bay Packers. Aaron Rodgers is out with COVID right now. He is being treated with ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine and other things, but he's out. And turns out he had led everyone in the league to believe that he was vaccinated, and he wasn't. And he got the disease. So the issue of basically lying and pretending to be immunized, I think is a word that he used, when he wasn't. Here is what he said in preseason. This is clip 16. And by the way, he couldn't play this weekend, and his Packers didn't do so well. They lost 13-7 to Kansas City with Rodgers absent. He also, I think, is required to be absent when the Packers face the Seahawks this coming Sunday. But back in the preseason, he didn't face the Seahawks or Kansas City or the Chiefs. He faced the press. And here is what he sounded like on the issue of his dealing with the need to be vaccinated and protected according to league rules. This is clip 16. Listen.
Are you vaccinated, and what's your stance on vaccinations?
Yeah, I've been immunized. You know, there's a lot of conversation around it, around the league, and a lot of guys who have made statements and not made statements, owners who made statements. You know, there's guys on the team that haven't been vaccinated.
You heard he said, yeah, I'm immunized. And that's supposed to be okay? That's a little bit problematical. He came on for a long time and then talked about him not getting the vaccine. He was on a program with Pat McAfee, and this is he now having COVID, having gotten no vaccine. Here's the way he described his situation and his opposition to the vaccine. This is 14A.
And I go back to like these two questions for the for this woke mob. Like, number one, if the vaccine is so great, then how come people are still getting COVID and spreading COVID and unfortunately dying from COVID? Like, if the vaccine is so safe, then how come the manufacturers of the vaccine have full immunity? So let's just step back and realize, like, this vaccine is revolutionary, the things that they're doing. However, we don't know a whole lot about it. And to just say that it's a blanket for all that ails you, in my opinion, is wrong and reckless. And for the media out there taking shots at me, like, you don't know my story, now you do. So quit lying about me. And personal health decisions, in my opinion, should be private.
Yeah, but that doesn't take away the fact that you misled the public, the press, your team, your employer, the world. And that's called lying. Or do you think that people understood that when he said he was immunized, what he was talking about was having some homeopathic treatments that are supposed to increase his antibodies, but obviously didn't do that well for him? And the idea that vaccines have never, ever claimed 100%. The Pfizer and the Moderna are both around 90%. And even for the percentage of people who do get cases, they tend to be milder, much less likely, vastly less likely to lead to hospitalization or death. And then he talks about how he came up with his own particular treatment in consulting with one of the primary medical experts in the country. This is clip B.
I'm 48 hours in, and I consulted with a now good friend of mine, Joe Rogan, after he got COVID, and I've been doing a lot of the stuff that he recommended in his podcasts and, you know, on the phone to me, and I'm going to have the best immunity possible now based on the 2.5 million person study from Israel that people who get COVID and recover have the most robust immunity. And I'm thankful for people like Joe stepping up and using their voice. I'm thankful for my medical squad. And I'm thankful for all the love and support I've gotten. But I've been taking monoclonal antibodies, ivermectin, zinc, vitamin C and D, HCQ, and I feel pretty incredible.
Okay, don't blame it on Israel. The Israeli medical authorities and, yes, the government do not recommend those procedures. They recommend a vaccine and a booster. Terry Bradshaw on Fox, another Hall of Famer, football Hall of Famer, great quarterback. He was broadcasting from the Naval Academy, and he said this about Aaron Rodgers.
I'd give Aaron Rodgers some advice. It would have been nice if he'd have just come to the Naval Academy and learned how to be honest.
Yeah.
Learn not to lie, because that's what you did, Aaron. You lied to everyone. I understand immunized. What you were doing was taking stuff that would keep you from getting COVID-19. You got COVID-19. Ivermectin is a cattle dewormer. Sorry, folks. That's what it is. We are a divided nation politically. We're a divided nation on the COVID-19, whether or not to take the vaccine. And unfortunately, we've got players that pretty much think only about themselves. And I'm extremely disappointed in the actions of Aaron Rodgers.
Is that clear enough? It was a clear and effective statement, it seems to me. There is much more going on about the other item of controversy that we were talking about with Professor Dershowitz, which is banning or at least opposing critical race theory. I almost said criminal race theory. No, critical race theory. We'll get to that and more coming up on the MedVet Show. And on the Michael Medved Show, don't forget, if you are planning to, join me tomorrow at the Ronald Reagan Library in Simi Valley, California. I can't believe it's tomorrow. Flying down, and look forward to broadcasting from the Reagan Library from noon to 3. And then the lecture in the evening gives you some time to look at the Reagan Library and the fascinating exhibits they have there. And then come join us again for a book signing and for a talk. And the talk is going to deal with my best-selling book, New York Times bestseller, called The 10 Big Lies About America. And combating anti-Americanism with the truth, and also on my book, The American Miracle, the Divine Providence and the Rise of the Republic. And that'll be all free. You just have to call up, contact, email the Reagan Library. I can find a click to it and information about the whole day, which should be terrific. Coming up tomorrow, on Tuesday, go to michaelmedved.com. Okay, the issue of critical race theory as a an issue in politics, first of all, you have to get the terminology straight. And I don't think using the term critical race theory is the best way to describe what I believe the American people really do want to stop. And what they really do want to stop is this idea of trying to teach children that they should feel guilty about the country that produced them. That instead of feeling grateful, instead of the theme of Thanksgiving, of being thankful for who we are and what we have, and the country that we have been privileged to grow up in and live in. And by the way, new polling shows that an overwhelming majority of Americans still believe that the United States is the best place to live on earth. And you're talking about even 60% of Democrats believe that. And yes, Republicans are more likely to believe it, even with a Democratic president. In any event, this issue about the media blaming racism and white supremacy for the negative reaction to what is called critical race theory, which really is good old-fashioned America bashing, that notion that somehow it's illegitimate to respond this way to, quote, trying to teach people about the truth, that's opposed, I think, pretty effectively by Batya Unger Sargon, who is going to be joining us on the show tomorrow. She's the author of a book called Bad News, and she is the an editor at Newsweek, on with Brian Stelter at CNN. Listen, this is clip three.
I think what happened, you know, Glenn Youngkin's victory was a perfect example of this. The media's response to Youngkin's victory is literally the reason that he won, right? How did they respond?
There's 100 media, 100 reactions. You're being pretty overly generalizing, I think.
Let me get more specific for you, okay? Because I have to say, I have to admit, having watched CNN all week, there's been a lot of very, very, very good genuflection on this front. But what happened right after the election was you saw host after host after host on MSNBC saying, oh, this is a victory for white supremacy, right? White supremacy wins again. Racism wins again. When, you know, the lieutenant governor that Youngkin won with will be the first black woman to hold that job. When Glenn Youngkin managed to flip majority black districts, when he managed to get between 40 and 50% of Latino voters, are all of those people white supremacists? Of course they're not. They're people who are worried about, number one, the economy, right? And number two, schooling. And it seems to me it is such a self-own to tell people who are worried about the economy that that is white supremacy, right? Mm. You are essentially criminalizing the views of working class Americans. And you saw the same thing with the conversation around critical race theory, right? You saw all of these pundits being like, these people don't know what critical race theory is. That is not a political statement. That is a class statement. Mm. They are not educated enough to be opposed to critical race theory. How dare they oppose it?
And then Senator Rick Scott, who's the head of the Republican effort to take back control of the U.S. Senate. They only need to win one seat total. But he was on also, Rick Scott, about the Virginia issue and basically making the point to CNN's Brianna Keeler that, look, critical race theory is being taught in Virginia. And of course that produces a backlash and an uproar, as it should. Senator Scott, clip five.
Parents know it's been, their kids are being indoctrinated with critical race theory in Virginia, and the Democrats wanted to deny it.
I mean,
and so
well, it's not
the
in the curriculum.
Showed up because they don't like being lied to.
I mean, just to be clear, it's not in the curriculum, in Virginia.
Brian, would you like me to, here? Let me just read you a few things. In 2015, while Terry McAuliffe was governor, the Virginia Department of Education promoted incorporating a critical race theory lens in education. You can still find it on the Department of Education's website, still there. In February 2019, a superintendent memo for the Virginia Department of Education promoted critical race theory and the idea of white fragility.
It's not part of the curriculum.
I looked at it yesterday. It's still there,
Brianna. I do want to ask you, just to be clear about where you are.
Let's all agree. They were trying to indoctrinate kids.
Okay. Again, there is so much evidence of this with trainings and backgrounds and curriculum supplements, and a lot of it the same names, Ibram X. Kendi, Robin D'Angelo. These are people who have made a fortune on what they call and the world calls critical race theory. What it is seeing everything about human beings and controversy and competition and more from a racial lens. There's one more from this, the CNN segment, where the reporters from CNN spoke to people who had been voting for Biden, who voted for Biden last year and voted for Youngkin this year. And here's what they said. This is clip 6.
They say they were also off-put by former President Obama when he came to Virginia to campaign for McAuliffe and called education issues, quote, phony, trumped-up culture wars.
Offensive in what way? I just feel like they're really tone-deaf. They're really dismissive and kind of blanket statements.
It reminded us of the school boards.
They weren't looking at the concerns on the ground. The concerns on the ground were we were really concerned about our kids' education. And the Democrats were not listening to that.
And look, that was also this from a Virginia mom on that same segment. Listen.
Parents were very angry during school closures at the teachers' unions. And for me, the nail in the coffin was on his last day of campaigning. He brought the head of the teachers' union to his rally and she spoke. And it was like someone just poked me right in the eye and said, you think you want to have a say in your education? Well, you're not going to.
Glenn, he listened to us. He met with us. He sent his wife to meet with special education parents. And they spent a lot of one-on-one time with parents.
Dana, do you think that's why Glenn Youngkin won Virginia, because he made education such a centerpiece of his campaign?
I do. We felt listened to for the first time, or I did.
Okay, this is good work for CNN, and good for them. And very revealing. I'll tell you something else that's revealing is one of the great speeches ever given that really touches on the core of this issue. We'll play you a few moments of that speech and more coming up on the MedVed Show.
Your daily dose of debate.
I think you are the greatest debater on radio today.
The Michael MedVed Show.
Michael MedVed Show. Okay, I've got Ronald Reagan on the mind for obvious reasons, because I'm flying down to California to speak tomorrow at the Reagan Library to broadcast the show from there. And it's almost too perfect, because one of the greatest speeches, I think, in recent American presidential history was the Reagan farewell address that he gave right after his incredibly eventful and truly wonderful 8 years in the White House on January 12th, 1989. It was his last of 34 speeches he gave to the American people from the Oval Office. And President Reagan had some closing advice, as presidents do when they give this kind of address, and one of his advices was to get American history straight. He said, we've got to teach history based not on what's in fashion, but what's important. And he went on to say this. Listen.
An informed patriotism. An informed patriotism is what we want. And are we doing a good enough job teaching our children what America is and what she represents
in the long history of the world. We've got to do a better job of getting across that America is freedom. Freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom of enterprise, and freedom is special and rare. It's fragile. So we've got to teach history based not on what's in fashion, but what's important. Why the pilgrims came here, who Jimmy Doolittle was, and what those 30 seconds over Tokyo meant. If we forget what we did, we won't know who we are. I'm warning of an eradication of that, of the memory that could result ultimately in an erosion of the American spirit. Let's start with some basics. More attention to American history and a greater emphasis on civic ritual. And let me offer lesson number one about America. All great change in America begins at the dinner table. So tomorrow night in the kitchen, I hope the talking begins. And children, if your parents haven't been teaching you what it means to be an American, let them know and nail them on it. That would be a very American thing to do.
And the speech goes on. It's wonderful. We'll post it at our website at michaelmedved.com so that you can hear it. The idea that you can lose this country by not knowing enough about its true past, by giving in to some of the trendy desires to run down America, to try to make Thanksgiving into a national day of mourning. How does that help the country or anyone who lives in it? It's one of the questions we ought to be confronting. It's also a very good speech, it seems to me, that was given over the weekend by Governor Christie. Chris Christie has been a fairly regular guest on this show, and he was speaking to the National Republican Jewish Coalition, which is a very well organized and it's well funded Republican organization that has been making some progress, particularly some progress during the Trump era at winning Jewish Americans over to the Republican Party. And they had Nikki Haley speaking, they had Ron DeSantis speaking, and they also had Governor Christie. And he actually spoke, I think, with some very solid advice. Here's what he had to say. This is clip 18.
We can no longer talk about the past and the past elections. No matter where you stand on that issue, no matter where you stand, it is over. And every minute that we spend talking about 2020, while we're wasting time doing that, Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, Nancy Pelosi, and Chuck Schumer are laying ruin to this country. We better focus on that and take our eyes off the rearview mirror and start looking through the windshield again.
And he says that deserves applause, he added, because if we don't get it, we are going to lose. And there were also well-received speeches, I mentioned, by Nikki Haley and by Ron DeSantis, and also by Chris Sununu, who is really a comer in the Republican Party. He's the governor of New Hampshire, and they're trying to get him to run for Senate from New Hampshire against Maggie Hassan, and the polls show that he could actually win that Senate seat. Governor Sununu said to the optimism in the room, Mr. Sununu offered hope, but also a reality check. He said, this week was a terrific week. But if you think this week is going to carry us for a year, you've got another thing coming. He added, if you are sitting here talking about 2020, or you are worried about who's going to run in 24, then you're missing the boat. Talking about the work that they have to do. And it's one of those things where right now I think it feels a lot more credible, likely, that Republicans can win the congressional gains that could actually change the country and change the country in a profound way. Stay tuned. That we will be talking about that and how that is possible and why it's possible a little bit tomorrow from the Reagan Library. There's also a movie that's come out. It's a movie, first-time director from a rapper who is known as The Bullets. His real name is Jameis Samuel. It stars Idris Elba and Lakeith Stanfield and Regina King and all kinds of other leading black stars. The film, it's a Western, all about real African-American cowboys, The Harder They Fall.
Now it's time for MedVed's Entertainment Minute.
Idris Elba, Lakeith Stanfield, Regina King, and Delroy Lindo. Quite a cast, all playing brutal but charismatic outlaws in the 19th century in the slick new Western, The Harder They Fall, now streaming on Netflix.
Man, old devil, it's gonna be Buck's last day amongst the living.
What exactly he do to you?
I know who you are.
Clearly, you don't know me.
That's Zazie Beetz as Stagecoach Mary, like the other principal characters in this melodrama, based loosely on people who really existed. But don't watch this film expecting historical accuracy or a convincing representation of the Western frontier. The stylish clothing and the modern rap soundtrack are distracting, and the plot is almost impossible to follow. But the long, elaborate gunfight and torture scenes are reasonably well staged, and the committed cast gives this thin script more heart than it deserves. It's rated R for excessively graphic violence and tough language, of course. 2.5 stars for The Harder They Fall. And one more thing, which is your opportunity, which you have for a couple of weeks more, to get a special discount on a MedHead Plus membership, which gives you access to all of our history programs, including one of our most popular, which is called What's So Great About President Reagan. And it talks about how he changed America and brought us back from a very, very down time in the late 70s after he got elected in 1980. Check that out at michaelmedved.com or medvedhistorystore.com, 11 cents a day, and you get free access to any of our history programs and to our daily show, commercial free, anytime you want it. That's 11 cents a day, a total of $79 a year, and a great opportunity to become a MedHead Plus member. Next time, big question. One of the potential candidates, and a serious candidate for President of the United States, has lost a ton of weight. No, it's not Chris Christie. I think he'd like to, but no, it's not him. Somebody else. And that's usually an indication of very serious intent. We'll tell you who it is. We'll also be talking tomorrow from the Reagan Library with Reagan speechwriter Peter Robinson, with Jerry Seib, the Washington editor of the Wall Street Journal, who wrote a book about the Republican era from Reagan through Trump. And we'll also be speaking about why it is that Americans who are so flush with cash and jobs right now, at least that's what the statistics say, the markets are up, but everybody thinks the economy is awful. And maybe they're right. We will deal with that. We'll also be speaking about some of the lessons from Ronald Reagan about the American future and the American soul, because some of the arguments that we're having right now are soul deep concerning the nature of freedom and America's future, because that future is obviously the trust of all of us in this greatest nation on God's green earth.